Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 266.
This week on the podcast, Puerto Rico, they still have no power.
And indictments are coming down in the Russia probe. So a nuclear war is probably about to start this week.
Plus, the GOP will champion an unbalanced budget if and only if their desperate need to win overrides their deepest held principles. So anytime.
And too many GOP lawmakers are scared of the political process right now.
Plus, sexual harassment. Everybody's doing it, literally. It's too many people.
And Trump was delighted by a trick-or-treating visit from unfat children with terrible media parents.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right. Find us here having giggle attacks. Oh my god.
Unless you find us on the floor collapsed into a heap of giggles.
Oh my god, it just took us like 10 minutes to
to record the final rundown.
For me to say unfat children for some reason.
Why is it so funny? Here, I'm going to play right now for you all the different times we tried this.
And Trump was delighted by trick-or-treating. Oh, damn it. Fuck. And Trump was delighted by a trick-or-treating visit from unfat children with terrible. I don't know if I'm going to be able to say that. And Trump was delighted by a trick-or-treating visit from. Shit.
Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
And Trump was delighted by a trick-or-treating visit from unfat children with terrible media parents. God, fuck, that was you that time. I mean, I was close.
Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I know. I just like was trying to pull it together. Okay. And Trump was delighted by a trick-or-treating visit from unfat children with terrible media parents. Fuck. We might have to come back to that. I just like can't say it.
So that was us 10 minutes ago.
Yikes.
This has been a messy operation. Ooh, so far.
It really has. But you know what? We're committed.
We're committed. We're going to get through this podcast.
Because lesser humans would have stopped.
So true.
A while ago.
Yikes. We're committed partially because we wanted to remind you that Puerto Rico still has no power.
Still has no power.
So that's something to keep in mind as you move forward to all of your exciting nuclear war news that's coming up.
Right, exactly. It's because the two people that they hired to do the entire job to give the to give
to
the island
the power structure.
Apparently, people didn't like that. That's how that
corrupt.
All went down. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was a $300 million contract that was granted to a company called Whitefish to rebuild part of the island's power grid.
Yes.
It's going to be in total like in a $1 billion job to rebuild their power grid. So this was a large portion of that contract. Yeah. The company Whitefish is. Apparently, the CEO is from the same town as Ryan Zinke,
Ryan
Zinke? Secretary of the Interior.
Ah, there it is. Yes.
Yeah. Zinke's son, in fact, worked for Whitefish last summer. Oh. Whitefish only has two full-time employees. Everyone else, I guess, a contractor or nobody.
Right, yeah.
But, so, as the 3.4 million American citizens living on Puerto Rico toil away without power, the federal government was busy awarding a contract to a two-person company in Montana that apparently raised some suspicions among people in various parts of government.
Fascinating.
Including the governor of Puerto Rico, who just canceled the contract.
Thank God.
Thank God. Yeah. There have been some rumblings elsewhere. The House Committee on Natural Resources sent a letter to the Power Authority in Puerto Rico demanding the records so that they could look at them. The Inspector General at DHS said it was investigating. The Puerto Rico's governor's office is auditing the contract. The board that Congress created to oversee Puerto Rico's financial affairs asked a federal court to appoint a new manager to supervise the power utilities.
That's probably a good plan.
But the CEO of PREPA, which is the power utility company there, said that Whitefish got the deal because they didn't ask for a large payment up front.
Sure. You know what? If there's one way to... That's a good business model. Because
you're a broke island.
I was going to say, if you're going someplace that you know is already in debt and you're really trying to win a $1 billion contract... Telling them that they don't have to write you a check immediately is a winning strategy.
That's a winning strategy.
So congratulations to Whitefish on their good
two-person
good
company
businessing.
Meet Island with no money.
But
apparently, the Whitefish recently had to request security protection because people had started throwing rocks and bottles at their crews.
Well, sure.
Because they were mad because it seemed like maybe it was a corrupt contract. I don't know. Just speaking.
Yeah.
Just speaking generally.
Yeah.
So in any case, Puerto Rico, a place with no power, still.
That's
and
right.
We're gonna remind you of that.
Weekly.
Every week, because seems like 3.4 American citizens living on an island deserve power.
You might get tired of us telling you, and therein lies the point.
Yeah. It's pretty tiring to not have power, too.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this was an exciting week because we... Got some indictments, you guys.
Wasn't this great that we are doing this podcast on a Monday night?
Thank God.
Instead of a Sunday?
So we can tell you about these indictments? This weekend, because this Monday was really killing it.
Yeah, this was where it's at. And I was so happy to see that, well, A, that you pulled all of the information for this document, because I was crying in a corner at work
Brent's
all day.
Brent's in a work cable.
But I was also really excited to see that the first of the indictments that you have on this list is not the Paul Manafort one. It's the George Papadopoulos one. Because Paul Manafort, we knew was a crook, and the FBI has been investigating him for God knows how long. And that's just, he's a fucking shithole. And yeah, he works for Donald Trump, and like, like we get it. Like, he was his campaign manager. It's a story. But like, in terms of the three indictments that we got today, clearly, if you are trying to like get to the bottom and you're trying to get Trump impeached by way of colluding with the Russians, then the George Papadopoulos indictment is the one that you care about.
Yeah. First of all, not only because it's a better story that has a direct connection to Russia, but also because he's already pled guilty.
Exactly.
So this is proof that someone in Trump's camp was colluding with Russia.
Right, exactly. And what he pled guilty was to misleading the FBI about the Trump campaign involvement with the Russians.
His dealings with Russia.
He has basically admitted to lying to the FBI about not colluding with the Russians.
Exactly. So if you're wondering who he was an early foreign policy advisor on the Trump presidential campaign.
Sure.
After he left the comfy confines of the Ben Carson campaign.
Right.
Headed right over to Trump.
By the way, he taught neither of those two anything about foreign policy.
First of all, he's 30 years old. Well, what does he know about foreign policy?
I know.
Nothing.
Right. But he worked for, like, the two people out of the 74 people that were in that clown car that, like, knew nothing about foreign policy.
I mean, could not have known. And maybe we're finally figuring out why.
I know.
But so, on October 5th, he pleaded guilty, but the case wasn't unsealed until Monday, until these indictments came down. So it was announced with the Manafort and Gates indictments. But basically, he'd reached a plea deal with prosecution because he was, in April of 2016, offered thousands of emails containing, quote, dirt on the Clinton campaign.
Mm-hmm.
This was months before the Russian hack on the DNC was known about. This is just a thing that's happening to Papadopoulos in 2016, in April. Then, in June of 2016, he sent a high-ranking campaign official, that's how it's referred to in the indictment, an email titled, quote, New Message from Russia, that said that the Russian Ministry of Foreign Affairs wanted to meet with either Trump or a campaign official in an off-the-record capacity.
Well, sure. Off the record.
Yeah. Then, a Trump campaign supervisor told him to follow up in August 15th of 2016, to make the trip if it is feasible.
Mm-hmm.
Then he was interviewed by the FBI on January 27th and lied about all of this.
Yes.
He said, first of all, that he was offered this information, but it was before he joined the Trump campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Because these are emails, we have dates on them, so we know that was untrue.
That's rough. That's the thing about emails, man.
It was a foreign professor. I don't know if it was a foreign professor, but it was a professor who was offering him, with ties to the Russian government, who was offering him this information. And apparently, he didn't even offer the thousands of emails until a month into Papadopoulos' tenure with the Trump campaign. So he might have made the initial offer before Papadopoulos officially joined the campaign. But Papadopoulos knew he was joining the Trump campaign when this information came to him. And he'd been there for a month by the time he found out about these thousands of emails.
Yeah, exactly.
In any case, he was arrested on July 27th. Mm. Prosecutors agreed to recommend either between no prison time and 6 months, depending on the plea agreement. And that's probably how he ended up pleading guilty.
Yeah.
But this is the first guilty plea of anyone from the Trump camp. And it also ties the Trump camp directly to Russia.
And what it also, I think, is important, now is a good time to remember that, yes, Donald Trump was obsessed with Hillary Clinton's emails in the respect of that she had her private server or whatever.
Right.
But he also, as the campaign rolled along, became very obsessed with her emails as it pertained to whatever was going on with Russia at the time. And also, like, he referenced, like, oh, I wonder what's in these thousands of emails. And then there was that whole thing where he, like, asked WikiLeaks to, like, look into, like, what was in all of these thousands of emails. And then there was the whole DNC leak. And there were, like, he was obsessed with her emails in a way that
Someone who had direct information they were available.
Yes,
would have
makes
been.
You think that he was a little bit more obsessed than like just being upset with her for having used a private server when she was the Secretary of
Correct.
State.
Correct.
Yes. So like
somebody some point said the term to him, thousands of Clinton emails.
Yes,
and,
correct.
And that is what got lodged in his head.
Yes, right.
And that's how we ended up.
And it seems
where
like it may have been
Papadopoulos.
Yes.
Or any of the many people that he clearly told in the campaign, because this 30-year-old idiot did not keep his mouth shut,
no,
obviously.
No, that's, yeah, I was going to say.
If there's one thing we know about that slick asshole.
Yeah.
Because if you look at him, he looks like a real slick asshole.
Yeah.
It's that he told everyone. Yeah. He was really impressed that he was the one that got reached out to, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
In any case, we also learned this week that Paul Manafort and Rick Gates, who's like a Paul Manafort shadow man, also are being indicted.
Yeah.
And they were taken into custody today.
Yeah, and they pled not guilty.
And they pled not guilty, and the footage is fun to watch. So that's something to do. they are the first charges that are being filed in this in the Russian interference investigation outside of this Papadopoulos thing was an earlier sort of thing. But Manafort, the issue with this indictment is that he's under investigation for being a shady asshole.
Right.
But his crimes don't necessarily, aside from the fact that he is obviously in bed with the Russians and he was the head of the Trump campaign, they don't tie the Trump campaign as an entity to Russia in the way that this Papadopoulos story does. So that's why we are claiming that this is a less interesting story.
Yeah, exactly. Because like he had dealings with them and he sort of like propped up, you know, Yanukovych, who like ultimately became the president of Ukraine and then was overthrown. And like, I mean, like, you know, he's got, but this was more sort of like shady money that he's moving around in shell accounts, like offshore
and
things like, I mean, like he's got like, look, Paul Manafort is basically like, he's basically a thug. And he's also like somebody who is like out to take your money if he can in any way, shape or form, whether you're an individual, whether it's any sort of business dealing, whether you're a foreign government. Paul Manafort doesn't care because he's a dick.
Yeah.
And that is basically what these charges are. You can't charge someone with being a dick. But like, yeah, that's his angle. And to a degree, everybody already knew that. Part of the big reason why he was brought on at the time that he was brought on to run the Trump campaign, it was around convention time, and he was brought in to be the bulldog to make sure.
Because the delegates were rebelling.
Because the delegates were rebelling. And so they brought Paul Manafort in to basically just be like, fall in line or I will have your families killed.
Yeah. And
basically.
That's, I mean, he's a thug. So he was the right guy for
that
job.
So he was the right guy for that job. You know, unfortunately for Trump, he's now indefinitely tied to him.
Right.
But like, you know, I mean, that was his whole existence, like as a person in politics is to come in and like be the heavy.
Yeah. And
so
he
this
was
is
told
not surprising.
He was going to be indicted like back in August. Like he was told he was on the hot seat in August.
Yeah.
The best part of all of this was that Mueller announced that there were going to be indictments coming on Friday, and the Trump camp didn't know who was being indicted, so they were forced to scramble around all weekend just like wondering.
Yeah.
Which is
reminding everybody that Hillary Clinton was colluding with the Russians.
Right. Yeah.
That's what
they spent all weekend doing. Right. So Trump went on like a weird tweet storm where he first asked the congressional Republicans to, like, do something to stop this investigation, essentially. And then went on, like, a weird rant about how Clinton... There's, like, this very minor scandal that has to do... It's not a scandal. They're making it a scandal. But that has to do with, like, a very minor deal that was made with uranium and Russia that peripherally involves Hillary Clinton.
Sure.
And they're, like, really trying to ramp it up as an exciting scandal.
And the dossier.
the dossier.
Yeah.
Gosh. Oh, we're going to talk about the dossier.
Uh-huh.
But so in any case, they spent all weekend trying to be like, yeah, maybe we did something, but look at the Clintons, because that's their strategy.
Exactly.
That's
right, exactly.
I was thinking about this in the car today.
This has been everyone's strategy for like the last basically like 3 decades.
I was thinking like this is the strategy of a loser, because this doesn't work once you're in charge. You can't just be like, yeah, but look at who this person who's no longer relevant because they're not president.
Exactly.
Look
did. Who I already...
Yeah,
beat
this is what a man who's been a loser his whole life does, is he immediately deflects by being like, see these other important people? They committed crimes.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work when you're a winner.
No.
He doesn't know how to be a winner because he's like a sad loser.
Yeah. And also, it's so shocking to me, too, that like I realize he's not an idiot, so he sort of like can't do like, you know, simple just putting well, things together in his mind. Yes, he is an
you
idiot.
You said he's not an idiot. I just want to clarify.
Oh, I did?
We don't want to make that mistake on this podcast.
No, he's an idiot. But, like, just this tweet, like, asking congressional Republicans to, quote, do something? Like, the thing that if he's going to be charged for anything at this point, basically, is going to be obstruction of justice. And they're investigating that because he said basically something similar to James Comey. Yeah. So, like, I just don't know why you would go on record with a tweet being like, hey, fire this guy who's, like, investigating me from the FBI right now. Like,
He doesn't know. And before we go on, because there are some great conspiracy theories abounding about all of this, we first want to mention who Rick Gates is. Because Rick Gates is not somebody that I feel like has gotten much attention.
No.
And because of that, we don't really necessarily understand the sort of context of why he's been indicted with Robert Mueller. I'm not with Robert Mueller, with Paul Manafort. By Robert Mueller. So we're just going to do a quick rundown of who he is, and then we're going to talk about all the great conspiracy theories that have come out of this.
Broadly, he is just Paul Manafort's flunky, basically.
Yeah, he's his, like, shadow flunky.
Yeah.
He's 45. He started out as an intern at Manafort's law firm, like, 30 years ago, and he's basically just been attached at the hip with him. So he's involved in all the Ukraine bullshit. He was involved in, you know, like, you know, with a bunch of Russian and Eastern European oligarchs and all the shell companies they set up in Cyprus to try to profit off all their pro-market work and stuff like that. He's in the hot seat because the indictment alleges that he transferred more than $3 million from offshore accounts, among a few other things. But so he basically was doing the, like, grunt work, the, like, lame, you know, stuff that was not important enough for Paul Manafort to do himself.
Paul Manafort was the big thinker.
Right.
Okay. And Gates was like he was like
the little thinker
coordinator.
Yeah, he's the coordinator.
Yeah.
And so Manafort brought him into the Trump campaign, but he stayed around after Manafort resigned. He landed a job at the RNC involving campaign fundraising. Then he was recruited by Tom Barrack, who's a real estate investor, who's a Trumper, to help run the inauguration. He raised a bunch of money for America First Policies, which is a pro-Trump group.
Sure.
And then he was let go in March because there were more reports about Manafort's dealings with Ukraine. But he somehow, he's managed to stay in Trump world a little bit more effectively than Manafort himself. Trump doesn't like him. He thinks he's a hanger-on and inadvertently has mixed him up with other Ricks in the past. So he doesn't seem fully clear on who he is. But Barrack hired him as the director of the Washington office of Colony North Star, which is his company, which allowed him to continue to sort of wield influence in Trump world. So this is, he's had a little more luck than Manafort because he's kind of been flying under the radar a little bit. But it seems like his luck is running out at this moment.
It would seem.
And before we move on to the conspiracy theories, one more note. Donald Trump is going to Asia this week.
I'm so
He's probably
about
going
this.
To do something crazy to distract us.
Oh, yes.
So keep an eye out. But also don't forget
that
he colluded with Russia.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You should always be remembering that. But also get into this Asia trip.
Oh, yeah. It's going to be really exciting. It's 11 days. He's going to have to make some comments to China about North Korea and other exciting Asia dramas.
Yeah.
I think, is he going to South Korea? I think he,
I don't know, maybe.
It's going to be exciting. So keep that in mind
for that.
Tell you about conspiracy theories that we are willing to endorse.
Yeah.
So the GOP has been kind of dilly-dallying when it comes to figuring out how to respond to all of this Russia conspiracy talk and whether to attack Mueller or not.
Right.
And
whether to do something.
Right.
Yeah.
And also whether they think a president can actually be held legally accountable for anything, which is an interesting departure from everyone's previous opinion of the presidency. So I'm sort of curious to see how this how this goes on.
Yeah.
But so the Republicans in Congress are working on this crazy theory of alt collusion, trying to suggest that the real interference was Russia feeding false allegations against Donald Trump to Christopher Steele, the private investigator who kind of broke that initial dossier. And in this version of the story, the FBI, since they investigated Steele's charges, is actually the agency that colluded and not Donald Trump's camp.
So good. I mean, this fits into his, you know, intelligence agencies as the enemy narrative that he's been going with since before he became president.
It's so absurd and yet so perfect. And interestingly, the Wall Street Journal is, like, really behind this.
Well, come on.
I mean, I feel like the Wall Street, this is, like, I would have guessed, and I'm obviously deluded, that the Wall Street, that this is even too crazy for the Wall Street Journal.
Yeah.
It's not, though. Their editorial page has been a Twitter with sure. exciting references to this Russia colluding with steel, colluding with the FBI campaign that they're running.
It's a story that someone thought up.
That's true. So, that's so true. And that's why the other Republican media outlets are running with it.
Right.
I feel like the Wall Street Journal is the paper of the rich Republicans.
Yeah.
And this feels a little wacky for them, but they're getting desperate, so who knows?
Right.
But in today's Wall Street Journal, there was an op-ed by two former Republican DOJ staffers who basically suggest that Trump should just pardon everyone who might be accused of something in the future, including himself, and that therefore he's just like above the law and can never be indicted for anything. They're basically saying that the president
is above the law. That's a genius plan in the most evil of the ways.
I know. So they're basically, like, for example, if Donald Trump walked into your house, torched everything, and then murdered your kids, as long as he pardoned himself, because he's president, he could not be facing charges for those things. Because as president, he has the power to pardon.
I don't know if that's a federal crime. But...
If he walked into the Senate, torched everything, murdered three senators.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The point is that there is a wing of the Republican Party, a wacky wing that seems intent on shepherding in fascism, that believes that Donald Trump is literally above the law.
They're the same wing of people who spent 8 years fearing that Barack Obama was going to initiate martial law at the end of his 8-year term so he could stay on as king of earth until he died, or maybe he didn't die ever because he might be the Antichrist. Well, like people who spent the last 8 years doing that.
And are now shepherding in that exact
trying
reality.
To figure out legally.
Right.
Yes. How to do that.
So in any case, the House Republicans also are trying to sort of tie all of this to Clinton. So that they can get her on as part of their sort of alt-collusion conspiracy.
You know what? I have a winning strategy for congressional Republicans. They should call Hillary Clinton into the and question her one more time.
Yeah.
And see how that goes.
See how that goes.
Because as much as I don't particularly care for her, her best moments really
were on the stand.
In recent history have been in front of congressional Republicans.
We don't agree with her on policy a lot, but she's a smart lady who can handle herself on the stand.
Yeah, I don't agree with her on the weather oftentimes.
No, but that doesn't mean that we wouldn't like to see her show them what being a thinking person is on the stand. Because we at least know she can do that.
She can. Yes, that's accurate. Yes.
And one of the reasons I think it's so weird to go after her this way, I know that they think she's the devil, and I know that they think that she's like somehow more than just a person, but
she's an idea.
She's literally a concept to them. But every time that she emerges as a person and not a concept, she makes them look foolish.
Yes, I know.
It's such a dumb person to pick on. The Clintons are smart, you guys.
I know.
That's how come they were able to be moderate Republicans who ruled the Democratic Party and still do for all this time. They are smart people.
Oh, boy, it's true.
They're not the Antichrist smart, like they're above the law.
Right.
They're just smart people who are smarter than these people. In any case, it's madness. Yeah. Part of the reason they're so desperate, though, is that their budget and tax plan situation...
Well, it's a mess.
It's a mess. It's going to work, you guys, because they need something, and they're going to make this the thing.
Yeah.
But the House finally passed the Senate version of the budget on Thursday, and the vote was really tight.
But barely.
It was 216 to 212, which means 20 people in the GOP defected. Yeah. Now, 11 of those were people from New York and New Jersey who were like, literally fuck all of you, because this tax plan eliminates the state and local tax deduction, and if you live in a high tax state, that really fucks you over.
Yeah.
Interestingly, the California Republicans did not defect over that.
They figured the California Democrats had it covered.
Exactly.
If we're going by state delegation, like...
I'm surprised, though, because Daryl Issa is...
I was going to say, he may very well lose. Hillary Clinton won his district.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm kind of surprised that he didn't think twice. I'm not surprised because he's an asshole, but I'm surprised also when people aren't thinking the way that I think they should be thinking.
Right.
A handful of conservatives also voted against the budget because it didn't cut spending as much as previous GOP blueprints have.
But you know
but
what?
They don't vote for anything useful.
And also, now that I think about it, Daryl Issa's district is filled with mostly rational people, but they're filled with fucking rich rational people.
Yeah, that's true.
So they are probably going to benefit greatly from this tax deal. So that's probably where his brain was.
I mean, maybe, but like, could California not retaliate?
Well,
true. I mean, it doesn't seem like, it doesn't seem like as a Californian, it's ever in your interest.
Yeah. I just feel like he can now go back to that district and be like, I got
y'all
some cash.
I did something. So the budget was always going to pass. But a lot of lawmakers held their votes until Thursday afternoon to add to the drama. People did not love this budget.
Right.
And there were a bunch of people who voted no who were like, these people are just doing this to keep the process moving forward. This doesn't mean anything about tax reform.
Sure.
Because there's other controversial provisions, including changing the 401k cap to lower it so that Americans don't have retirement savings and we get rid of retirement savings in an effort to pay for tax cuts for the wealthy.
Yeah.
And then there's the fact that this adds a huge amount to the deficit.
Yes.
And that's
as we railed on
where I think it really
last week on the podcast.
Paul Ryan doesn't usually cast a vote because it's not custom for the speaker to do that, but he cast a vote in favor of this budget. And I feel like that was of all the things he could have stepped out on. And it was because it was tight that he had to do it.
Yeah.
This is an interesting one for him.
Yeah.
Because he's a real cutting spending deficit hawking like mathematician.
Right.
Except clearly he's really bad at it.
Fuzzy mathematician.
Fuzzy mathematician. Yeah. But so this conservatives traditionally don't want a deficit. They're big. They used to be big on balancing the budget. They wanted to balance the budget by cutting taxes and cutting services.
Right.
But they wanted it balanced.
Yes.
The Democrats were more like, we can spend on people. We just shouldn't cut taxes to, for everyone. Right. And while those both seem so thoroughly rational compared to what we're dealing with now.
Right.
This is a wild departure for the Republicans.
Yeah.
Their desperation, it's led them to do this. It's suddenly, they're suddenly talking about whether they want to actually bring down the top tax rate. Because that, you know, a lot of the big money, the big deficit run up in this bill has to do with the fact that for years they've been talking about cutting the top tax rate.
Yeah.
And they usually chicken out because...
Yeah.
And then they get mad about it.
Right,
but they chicken out because it robs us of too much money.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's where the money comes from.
Exactly.
And rich people like to point that out, but it's also like, I don't, who cares?
But the other thing that is interesting about this is that this tax plan will take a lot of people off the tax rolls entirely because they're doubling the standard deduction. So, and they're expanding the child tax credit. Just a few years ago, Mitt Romney was complaining that only, that 47% of Americans pay no income tax. Remember?
Yes.
Remember his 47%
I do.
Lament?
Indeed. Yes. That's why he's perhaps
not the president.
Not the president now.
Or ever.
Potentially.
Yeah.
But I mean, right. Yeah.
Exactly. But it's interesting to me that they are also willing to break with that tradition and take more people off the tax rolls.
Well,
more.
Because then they can say in a secret room that 52% of people aren't on the tax rolls.
That's true. Yeah,
right?
this might help them.
Because that's more than half, and that sounds really bad.
That might really get people motivated to vote in a dramatic way. I don't know what direction.
Yeah.
In any case, here are the Republicans from high-tax states who voted for this budget. This is just for your berating pleasure.
Yep.
Feel free to give these guys a call. Mm-hmm. Let them know what your thoughts are on the matter. We have Tom Reed from New York. He serves on the Ways and Means Committee. We have Chris Collins from New York. He was an early Trump endorser, and he's an asshat, but he's from New York. We have Rodney Frelinghuysen, who has a long last name. He's from New Jersey.
Haven't
he's on the Appropriations Committee.
On something?
I think so.
Yeah,
well,
but I don't remember.
New Jersey.
Why. Anyway.
So, like,
yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
But notably, all the Republicans we said from California, but also from Illinois, voted in favor of the budget. So if you are a person who lives in New York, New Jersey, Illinois, or California, and you just want to give somebody from your state a call and let them know that you don't particularly appreciate having your taxes go up to pay for the wealthy to not have taxes.
Right.
Those would be good people to start with.
Yep.
Just a thought. Just
thinking
aloud. Just doing some thinking. In any case, they are trying to hammer out the final deals of their tax plan. They're eyeing Wednesday as a potential release date.
Sure.
But it's the tax plan situation. The reason they passed this budget was so that they could use reconciliation. We talked about that last week. The tax plan fight is going to be an interesting one because it is so dramatically opposed to many of their most basic principles in the Republican Party, even as it cuts taxes for wealthy people, which is ultimately their real goal.
Right.
That it's, I feel like they want to have a win and they think this can be a win and they want to look like they did something for 2018. But I also think that a lot of the seats that are the most risky for them in 2018 are in blue states. They're swing districts in blue states. And if they don't want like 10 districts in blue states to swing over their tax bill, then this is not a small, like they could lose their majority over this just from blue states.
Yeah.
Because that's,
I agree.
Blue states are going to lose out on this. Yeah. If they pass this, if they take away the state and local tax deductions, blue states will lose out. And that includes people that live upstate in New York. That includes people that live in rural Illinois. That includes central Californians.
Yeah.
We will lose out because we pay high state taxes here.
Yeah.
Now, if they want to give us those seats, then by all means, go ahead. But I don't think this is such a smart plan.
I don't know. I am of two minds of it because I agree with you, like, broadly.
Yeah.
But also, knowing, like, being from a swing state, I just, like, I know the impact of having a vote on this allows you to have the ad in 2018 that talks about your challenger raising taxes.
Right. That's true.
You voted for a tax cut, and your opponent didn't, and that's an easy get for people, and it makes it sound like it's some, like, money-hungry Democrat who, like, just, like, wants to go and have, like, some government bureaucracy. Now, that's garbage.
Of course.
And I get it.
But it also allows your opponent to run on the fact that your congressional representative sacrificed you to save money for rich people.
And that is what I feel like...
is the other mind.
Right, yes. And there's an easy way to fight that classically Democrats have been terrible at.
Yeah. I mean, it's true we're bad at that.
And I don't trust that all of a sudden in 2018, we're all of a sudden going to have a response to like having voted no on this tax bill. Like, I just don't,
I don't think there will be a coherency. I think that there is a possibility that because there is a very activist-y Democratic base at the moment that's not answering to the DNC, that it's possible that some of these swing districts where they, like, I'm thinking about the district that my parents are in upstate New York. There's over 100 groups actively involved in flipping that district.
Yeah.
If the this is not related to the DNC or the state party or anything. These are just independent groups that are looking for ways to flip the district. If one of them comes up with the message, it doesn't matter if the DNC endorses it.
I agree.
Because there's going to be an apparatus to spread the message.
If and if they just happen to be the loudest people in the room, then that might also be enough, too.
Exactly.
I hope you're right.
I mean, I might be wrong. But it's one thing, I think, to just vote to sacrifice for rich people in general. It's another for people to be able to say, you sacrificed me for another state's, you know, to give tax cuts to people in another state.
Yeah.
Like, you sacrificed us, your own constituents, and not just for the rich, but for Iowa.
Yeah.
You know, like, and in a lot of states that are big states where people resent paying these high taxes if they're in swing districts, like, I feel like the idea that the Midwest got something that they didn't get would piss them off.
Right, yes.
Because the Midwest is always getting shit that they don't get.
That's right.
Constantly.
Yeah.
So, in any case, I feel like this is, I don't know, I feel of two minds about this. I think a lot of them do too, and that's why this has been such a complicated time in Congress.
Well, yes, you're definitely right about that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this week was a big week for random shakeups for 2018 and 2020 being announced.
Yeah.
Eric Garcetti announced that he's not running for governor of California. That's an open seat because Jerry Brown will be retiring. And so far we have Gavin Newsom, who I think is sort of like the favorite. But then also Antonio Villaraigosa, our former mayor in LA, and then John Chiang, our state treasurer. Yeah. Eric Garcetti was considered kind of like because he'd already announced he wasn't going to run again.
Yeah.
So everyone kind of thought that was what his deal was. But it seems like now he might be running for president.
I think he's going to run for president.
Yeah.
He's been to Iowa. I believe he's been to New Hampshire.
All right. We talked about him going to Iowa.
Yeah. I don't know what his rationale is necessarily.
I can't be running for president.
I mean, like,
yeah, I get that LA is a big city. It's not that I don't understand. It's a complicated political ecosystem and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
I just feel like the mayor of a major metropolitan area cannot run for president. You have to be a governor first if you're going to go that route.
I would like him to, actually, because I think that he's a pretty good politician, I feel like he would be smart. Like, I think that I don't think he would win necessarily,
no.
But I think he could potentially hang around maybe a little bit longer than people. And he also kind
something.
Of has, like, you know, like people always like refer to him as like the hipster mayor. And
that's
like,
true.
I feel like he could maybe appeal to like an interesting part.
I've always found him a little boring,
but
though.
Like, I think he is a little boring. And I think that if he actually had a little bit more of like an Obama sort of like, and not even all of that, but just sort of like charisma, half of it, a third of it,
right.
Even, I feel like he could really be going places right now, because like he's sort of charming in kind of a way, but not enough of a way. And I don't trust that he really has that many great ideas.
No,
so.
He doesn't. We've been living in LA this whole time and feel lukewarm about him.
Right.
So he can't have that many great ideas.
Yeah, but I'd like
he's
to
not a visionary.
I'd like to see what he comes up with, though, because I feel like
I'm interested to see as many California or New York candidates as possible.
For sure.
I'm interested to see as many candidates from large states. If another Chicago person wants to step forward, I'm into that too.
Yeah.
I feel like I want to see the clapback of the resist states.
Yeah.
And so I'm into it. I just like, as if I were Eric Garcetti, I might be like, why am I going
to
do
that? You
want
to know what's so funny, though? I feel like, and not to spend too much time on California here, but like, I feel like some of the people who, it wouldn't surprise me if some more people from California, other than, I mean, Kamala Harris, I think everybody sort of just like, talking about that right now, but like, people from California run for president. And it might be because they've lost either the California governor's or Senate race.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Isn't that insane?
I mean,
because like, I feel like, or decided that they weren't going to be able to win it.
Right.
Like, which is maybe what Garcetti did, because like Newsom basically like has that unlock unless some scandal comes out, which has happened before with him. So like that could happen.
Good.
But like, you know, Tom Steyer is always getting talked about as a person who's going to run for president. But like, he also could very well be a person who that he's been being rumored as somebody who might run against Dianne Feinstein.
Mm-hmm.
So like he might lose that race, then like, well, I guess I'll just run for president instead. Like,
I've been campaigning already.
It's like such a weird progression.
California, man.
Like California Senate loser.
Although this is what I've never understood about Villaraigosa, because I know everyone always talks about him
as an
exciting up and coming person. He was just the mayor of LA.
Right.
Name a mayor for me right now who legitimately transcended into some sort of national office.
And if we're ranking Los Angeles mayors, I'm not convinced Antonio Villaraigosa is like super high on the list as far as I would
remember. I can't get out of my mind the LA magazine cover that was just a picture of him that just said failure. That's my memory of Villaraigosa.
Yeah.
So I don't know. LA is also a place where in New York City, I think it's a little bit easier to be a mayor who is sort of like the effects of whom are felt, because it's a much more condensed city. Everyone's much more sort of cohesive there.
Yeah.
Here, I feel like the city government almost like isn't relevant to a lot of what goes on. There are so many cities within the city. Like, you know, I don't live in the city of LA, even though I live smack in the middle of the city of LA. So like, there are so many ways in which your sort of effect can be diluted that it's not the same as being the mayor of a city that is like a real cohesive city.
Oh, I can guarantee you that there are people in this city who aren't totally stupid when it comes to politics, who would have to take 5 seconds to remember who our mayor is.
Yeah. No, I think it's interesting because, I mean, we're both really interested in politics. I almost never pay attention to what's going on at the city level here unless something really exciting happens.
Right, exactly.
I know what's happening at the state level in California. I often know what's happening in the Bay Area, but like, I don't know what's happening in LA a lot of the time. And it's because it's just really hard to grasp like what the effect of leadership in
what
a weird,
about.
Dispersed place like this is.
Yeah, I agree.
So in any case, I question both Garcetti and Villaraigosa for their aims.
I do too.
Other news, Orrin Hatch is sort of, the rumor is that he's been privately telling people he might not run in 2018.
Yeah, well, he, like, you know, Diane is in his early hundreds.
Yeah, exactly.
So
apparently Mitt Romney might run for the seat, though.
You know what? I mean, I'm into that, just in the sense that, like, a Democrat is probably not... Right. We're not there yet in Utah. I know some of these other states were, like, in the West, like, maybe... Ooh, you know, maybe we're not that far from Arizona voting for a Democrat, but, like...
Utah, we're far.
We're that far.
Yeah.
So, like...
Romney is not from Utah, though.
I know, but
I know he's
like,
a Mormon, but, like, can any Mormon just run any in Utah?
Yes.
Like... Can a Mormon from New York City run in Utah?
Yes.
Because he's from Michigan, where the trees are the right height. Yeah, he's not from Utah.
I know. It doesn't matter.
It's nonsense. In any case, the biggest news was that Jeff Flake is going to retire.
Yeah.
And that is big, A, because he really hasn't been in the Senate that long, and he's not, like, 100 years old. So he's retiring because he's just, like, over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been the punching bag for Trump for a while.
Yeah.
And maybe he just can't handle the stress. But... He also delivered a speech with his his plan to not run again, that was really pointed.
Yeah, it was.
And he's thrown the whole race into chaos because no one expected this. And so it's like every single person thinks they're winning the California primary. I mean, the Arizona primary now.
Yeah.
They have the Republicans are eyeing Jeff DeWitt, who's the state treasurer there. There's Martha McSally, who's a representative there. There's Matt Salmon, who's a former rep there. There's also Kelly Ward, who's a state senator and a loon bag.
Yeah.
Who's running with the backing of Steve Bannon.
Yes.
There's like a very crowded field all of a sudden of people who did not know they were going to run for this until very recently.
Yeah.
So that is sounding very exciting.
Yeah. I have mixed thoughts on Jeff Flake because I have obviously appreciated his words on Trump since he has been in the Senate.
But he hasn't been voting in a way that's helpful.
Yeah, I know. Like, I saw somebody like tweet that was like, I wish his speechwriter could be casting his votes.
Exactly.
Because it's like, you know.
It's like all well and good to say. It's like with John McCain. It's all well and good to say the words until you cast the vote.
Exactly. And I do, but it's sad in the sense that, like, he feels so disheartened that he can't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, and that is what, especially in the Senate, like, it's, you know, I don't necessarily think of Flake as, like, a deal maker or even a moderate per se. But I mean, like, as a person who sort of like most of his brain synapses are firing properly, like, he would be nice in a state that has two Republican senators for like him to be one of them in the sense that he's like not batshit crazy.
Yeah, he's not batshit crazy. As we recall, I spoke to him on the phone once. I never tire of reminding everyone that.
Yeah. So like, I guess I'm sort of like sad to see him go as far as I could be sad to see, like, any
like
Republican
big
go, because, like, he's just going to get replaced by another Republican who might not, you know, have as strong words to say about Donald Trump. He might be replaced by Kelly Ward.
Exactly. As always with Arizona, I don't know which way this is going to go.
No, I don't either.
Arizona surprises me a lot.
Yeah, I know.
It's a state.
I mean, usually statewide, they go as crazy as they can.
Yeah. No, they love us. It's interesting because
their governor
locally,
is the one of the more mad people, like, in terms of, like, needs to be, like, in a padded room somewhere crazy right now. So, like, and also they elected Jan Brewer multiple times. So
they're that state.
They're that state.
And it's interesting because sometimes their local reps aren't that bad.
Right.
But they get crazier the more important the office is.
Yeah.
They like to go full batshit for, like, a statewide office.
Right. Yes, that's right.
And then they kind of peel back. You know, like, the Senate has been less crazy because there's two of them.
Right.
So that's not, like, governor, you know?
Yeah.
But it's, like, they run hot and cold on crazy.
They do.
In any case.
They really do.
But speaking of state governments, California, in the midst of all of this sexual harassment news that's been breaking.
Witch hunt.
The witch hunt. Uh-huh. Had an interesting thing happen where, and I think this is the only state government where this has happened, but almost 200 women signed a letter denouncing a culture of rampant sexual misconduct in and around the state government in Sacramento.
Are just boys being boys up there.
Of course.
In the government.
It's interesting because California has Democratic supermajorities everywhere, so it just didn't occur to me that everyone was also still an asshole. But I should have known because it's politics.
There you go. Yeah.
And
they're men.
Should have known. And they're men. And men are just being assholes forever. Exactly.
God. Not pat you on the ass and say, good job, honey. I mean,
such
like
a simple request, and yet, so far.
God.
In any case, the New York Times actually had this story. And the LA Times broke it, I think. But it made the national paper. So it is notable.
Yeah.
And what else is notable is that all of Hollywood is now being accused of sex. I mean, like, every executive.
Yeah.
And you know what? All of them did it.
Exactly.
I'm going to go on the record right now in defense of the internet.
Yeah.
because I've been hearing terms like witch hunt,
uh-huh,
things like that.
From non-Donald Trump people.
From non-Donald Trump people. Yeah. And I want to point out that A, justice is carried out by regular people. Your jury is your peers.
Yep.
The court is manned by human beings.
That's right.
It's not if 300 manned people by computers.
Said you grabbed them.
Right. Then you probably did. A few things. I have a few things to say. One of which is that people saying that they were assaulted on Twitter and Facebook is a way of building a safe space for people to actually come forward with charges.
Correct.
Because in an environment where your reputation and career and livelihood can be destroyed by one powerful man,
yep,
like Harvey Weinstein,
yep,
who did this to multiple women or paid off multiple women, mm-hmm, it is not necessarily a safe... The courts are not necessarily a safe place for you. We've seen this again and again with campus sexual assault. Courts are never a safe place for women.
No.
It is always, the burden of proof is always on the woman that was assaulted.
Yeah, it's on the victim.
And in a case that is always going to be he said, she said, because these things happen in private for the most part, women are just never the authority that people trust.
It's going to be interesting now that gays are getting in the game because there's no woman to blame.
Exactly. I know. It's going to be very complicated.
So, I don't know what it's going to be. Yeah.
But
people are really going to have to unpack
that. I feel
that.
Like... the first thing I want to say is that Harvey Weinstein lost his job and was stripped of all of those things by other men. So women made the accusations, but women did not take his job away. Twitter did not take his job away. Facebook did not take his job away. Other men took his job away. Now, maybe they took his job away because they thought his behavior was inappropriate. Maybe they took it away because his brother was trying to land grab.
Well, it wasn't because they thought his behavior was inappropriate, because they all fucking knew.
Exactly. So whatever the reason they took it away, there are not enough women in power in Hollywood to take away all the things that were taken away from him. It was other men that took those things away.
Yep.
So whatever... you are hearing about how witch hunts are going on.
Right.
I want to point out that the term witch hunt is a gendered term.
It
witches
is.
Are women.
Yep.
Witch hunt is a term that describes getting rid of troubling women in society by calling them witches and then burning them at the stake.
Right.
Or hanging them or whatever you were doing.
Yeah.
Like, there is no warlock hunt going on. That's not a term that we hear ever. No one colloquially uses the term warlock hunt or, you know.
Yeah.
Manhunt is a term that describes hunting one man in a military setting.
Right.
Or a crime setting.
Yeah.
But calling this a witch hunt, as I said to Brent and as my dad said to me earlier, is like calling a deer hunt something where deer turn in hunters. Like, that's not what happens.
No.
In this culture, it is women that get hunted, and it is men that are hunting them.
Yeah.
And saying that on Twitter does not make you part of a witch hunt.
Yeah.
I will say that... this is taking on a life of its own, and
it is
getting interesting because there are a lot of people very swiftly losing positions or resigning or things like that without sort. And that is another thing that I lay on the feet of men, because they're the ones taking away those positions. So, like, if you are mad that somebody lost their job over an unproven accusation of sexual assault by 35 women or whatever, then by all means, ask the man who took the job away from him to reconsider.
Because the woman did.
It wasn't a woman who took the job away. But the story today that broke was sort of like rounded out the whole week in craziness.
Yeah.
Because, as Brent said, the gays are getting in on it.
Well, and I said to, I was talking to, and I should have never said it to him, but I did anyway. I was talking to my conservative coworker.
Classic.
And when the Weinstein story first broke, well, second broke, or hundredth
broke
since we've known
recently
about it since
broke.
The 80s.
Right.
I said to him, I was like, well, get excited because the gay dam is going to break at some point too. I mean, we've sort of already been there with the whole Bryan Singer scandal, which we talked
this
about years ago, which we, I think we collectively decided that we didn't really care about. But anyway.
In the gay community also, there is the vulnerable people that get preyed on are usually young. And so there is an aspect that it's still people that are disempowered in the sort of larger scope of things. But
in the sense that it doesn't set men broadly back to harass a woman.
Right.
It really, this Kevin Spacey thing really set the gays back.
Oh my God.
Which is it's not the most unfortunate thing.
No.
The most unfortunate thing is that it happened and to Anthony Rapp.
Right.
But the second most unfortunate thing is that Kevin Spacey was molesting a 14-year-old and then apologized it and came out by saying that he's now choosing to live a lifestyle of being gay. So, like, no, Kevin Spacey. Like, don't be doing this to Anthony Rapp. But also, Don't be saying any of the words that you're saying right now.
Well, like, as I said to Brent earlier, it's 1950 again. Because Brent was like, well, he didn't come out as a pederast. And I was like, in 1950 speak, he did.
Yeah, right, because he was gay.
He came out as gay.
Yeah. So there were a lot of problems with his statement, like, on top of what he did. And also blaming it on the fact that he was drunk.
Right.
Was not a good look either.
It never is.
It really
never
is. It's
a frequent excuse, and it never is the right one.
No, exactly. Yes. It's not an excuse for rape.
No.
So
under any circumstances of anyone of any gender. No,
correct. Yeah. So anyway, I think my favorite response to this was Zachary Quinto's response. Mm-hmm. And I would sort of like to read the whole thing, if you don't mind. Because I feel like it's all of our words, I think, basically. And it was well put. So he said, here it is. It is deeply sad and troubling that this is how Kevin Spacey has chosen to come out. Not by standing up as a point of pride in the light of all his many awards and accomplishments, thus inspiring tens of thousands of struggling LGBTQ kids around the world, but as a calculated calculated manipulation to deflect attention from the very serious accusations that he attempted to molest one. I am sorry to hear of Anthony Rapp's experience and subsequent suffering, and I am sorry that Kevin only saw fit to acknowledge his truth when he thought it would serve him, just as his denial served him for so many years, which is my favorite part of that. May Anthony Rapp's voice be the one which is amplified here. Victims' voices are the ones that deserve to be heard. I mean, like, slow clap for Zachary Quinto. Like, he got all of that right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Netflix finally figured out a way to cancel House of Cards. Netflix has been trying to cancel House of Cards for months. And today they were finally like, aha!
Yeah.
Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
Sexually harassed Adam Rapp.
I know.
House of Cards, goodbye. Like,
yeah.
They pretended like they were doing it on principle, but in fact, they had been looking for an excuse for a while. Yeah.
It'll be curious to see whether Kevin Spacey gets to work again.
I know. Well, this is funny because this is something that I feel like this is the kind of scandal that only occurs in context of a larger scandal. Like,
he
would have definitely worked again if this had just broken randomly.
Yes.
Because no one would have paid any attention.
Right.
It's interesting that this scandal happened. You know, I mean, it's not interesting.
Yes.
It's obvious.
He's like
that
now
why
sort of like lumped
now, but,
in with like
but now
one
he's,
of the guys.
Now he's lumped in with Harvey Weinstein.
Right, exactly.
Which is funny because in many ways, while this is a similar thing, he couldn't be more different than Harvey Weinstein.
Right.
And,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but like it. But I think he may never work again, and it will be because of the timing of this, and not because we wouldn't have forgiven this at one time.
I agree.
Which is something that you should think about when you hear any woman or person claiming that they've been sexually assaulted by someone.
As a minor.
Is that as a minor or any
or
age,
not a minor,
especially
but,
if it's a woman, any age, because oftentimes the only time that we choose to punish somebody is when it's in context.
Yes, that's
and
very true.
And this happens out of context all the time.
And I, what will be, the other thing that will be interesting about this is to see if there is more context in the sense that, like, can, like, imagine.
Can Anthony
imagine,
Rapp be the only person
that's I was going to say, imagine a world where a 26-year-old strapping young gay Kevin Spacey, who is, you know, soon to go on to win a bunch of Oscars, is not, like, scamming around on a bunch of people, whether they're 14 or otherwise.
Well, and
so I don't think that's a world that exists
in Hollywood, because Hollywood is kind of a meat market anyway. Men get sexually harassed here, not
of course
with the same frequency that
women
do,
and also because like
and not in the same ways necessarily. But this is something that even came out earlier in the Me Too conversation, which was that male actors especially are in very vulnerable positions.
Yes,
and so a lot of the time they too are mistreated by superiors,
whether
those be men or women.
Right. Well, and I think you know we live in a city which, you know, this is a good thing about this city, but gay men have power in the city.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like, I like that in the sense that, like, I feel like many of the people who are sort of like, you know, let's say running a studio or whatever it is that they're doing.
Yeah, there's a lot of
can be
gay
here and aren't elsewhere. But like that also is like, you know, you're not going to hear about like the gay guy running some like as the CEO of like some giant corporation, like coming out of Des Moines, like doing this, because like that person is not a gay person.
No, exactly.
So.
No, but that me anytime that you are in a position of power,
a position of power,
you
can do things like
in
this.
A position where you can
you shouldn't
abuse
but
that
you
power.
Could. Yeah,
and this is where I point out that I challenge you to name more gay women than can fit on one hand who are in positions of power in the right. city.
Well, Ellen did just sexually harass Katy Perry on Twitter. I don't know if you
I heard all about it. Yeah. Okay. In any case, in final news.
Next.
Moving on from sexual harassment to a kind of harassment that just... I'm not clear what it is.
The story that caused us to not be able to get through the rundown earlier is finally upon us.
Here are some things that Donald Trump said when a group of trick-or-treaters descended upon him that were children of the White House press corps. First, I cannot believe the media produced such beautiful children. How does the press treat you? I bet you get treated better by the press than anybody in the world. These are beautiful, wonderful children. You're going to grow up to be like your parents. Don't answer. That can only get me in trouble, that question. Then he joked, you have no weight problems. That's the good news, right? Then as the visit winds down, he said the children could stay, but that their journalist parents should get out.
Right.
God. Literally said, they can stay. The parents, maybe not so much.
I know. I love everything about this story because, like, it's like you said, he likes the kids.
He clearly loves the children, right. And it's not even creepy.
Right.
It's just
like,
weird.
Yeah, it's like he's the grandfather or the, you know, crazy uncle or whatever that, like, offers you a beer when you're 12 and you're like, but I'm 12. And he's like, well, you know, doesn't understand. He doesn't like, you know, he was trying to be nice to the kids, but like didn't realize that like you have no weight problems. That's good news, right? Was like not the,
that's not,
wasn't the crowd, you
commenting
know?
Commenting like, on their physique is not.
The crowd. Like, and I actually sort of like, this is such a good story.
It's peak Trump. It's somehow it really both is. One of his most charming moments and also just like the most peak Trump thing that's ever happened.
I know.
It's both horrifying and charming. And when you watch the video, you will see what we're saying.
Yeah.
Because this is the first time I've ever seen him, and it's only because he's surrounded by only children, that he doesn't strike me as just like innately creepy in a way that I can't unsee.
Right.
Like, he doesn't seem creepy in this video.
No.
He seems like he really does like the kids. He wants them to have a good time.
Right, he does. And he wants to have a good time with them, but he doesn't know how to make either of those things happen.
No.
Properly.
No, it's sort of sad. It's sort of sad.
Yeah.
Considering that he's a man with a zillion grandchildren.
Right.
And, like, also has had children of his own.
Exactly. How That's
little
how
he seems to know about interacting with kids.
Right.
But in any case.
Oh, boy.
We highly recommend you watch the video.
It's good.
It's good times for all.
Yeah. Look at all the unfat children.
Thousands of them all over the world. I chose not to leave the story about how France is running out of butter on the dock, but that was on the front page of the Times today, so I'm just throwing that out there if you're looking for extra reading.
Yeah.
We'll be back next week at the normal time.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Unless we find out on Friday that there's going to be indictments on Monday, we should wait the weekend.
Yeah. If it turns, this is going to become a Tuesday podcast if indictments start coming out every Monday. Exactly. Just be ready. Be ready any day.
Yeah.
And we will talk to you whatever that day is.
That's right.
Bye.
Bye.